Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it is 29 degrees and overcast. Today is Wednesday, December 20th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. One of the wettest cities in Alaska is getting an expensive new rain gauge. Ketchikan is moving forward with an innovative, artistic, and somewhat controversial proposal from two Dutch designers who specialize in kinetic art projects. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Ketchikan has a love-hate relationship with rain. The city averages about 150 inches of rain annually and has approached 200 in recent memory. It seems only fitting that we have a public rain gauge to measure and show off how much precipitation we get each year. With that in mind, the city put out a request for proposals with a $100,000 cost limit and handed the selection responsibilities over to Ketchikan Public Art Works, or KPAW, a group affiliated with the local arts council that focuses on public art. That committee recruited a cross-section of residents to review proposals and make a recommendation. Here's Glenn Thompson, one of the panel members, who spoke during a recent Ketchikan City Council meeting about the selection process.
There was about 15 or 20 of us in a room looking at 31 different pieces of art. It took us the better part of a day, probably 6-8 hours. The piece has elements of Ketchikan's mechanical history. It's visual, it's interactive, it's historical, and I think it's really unique.
The piece features three rows of plexiglass bottles. The top has seven bottles, one for each day of the week.
So people will be able to see each day of the week how much rain we get.
That's Kathleen Light of the Arts Council giving the City Council some details.
From the end of the week, the bottles will then drain into the month. So if it's October, there'll be lots of rain. If it's June, maybe there won't be as much. At the end of the year, all of the months will then drain into the bottle on the bottom, and that will be the cumulative total of the rain of the year.
The city council was divided in its support for the rain gauge, and the recommendation squeaked past after a 3-3 vote. Mayor Lou Williams III broke the tie, voting in favor of the project. A big complaint among those who voted no was the approximately $95,000 price tag, but the cost limit was set by the council, and Williams notes that funding will come from the city's share of the state cruise passenger head tax. The justification is that the gauge is an attraction for visitors and will sit prominently on the downtown cruise ship dock next to the visitor center. Some on the council say they worry about maintenance and potential vandalism with the new gauge. Here's council member Bob Sievertson.
I have concerns about motors and heaters and sanitation issues. I don't want to build maintenance into this piece of art just for the name of art.
Andy Donato, systems engineer with Ketchikan Public Utilities Electric Division, says that KPU can maintain it, although he has some suggestions for the artist to improve its durability. But Sievertson has another, more subjective complaint.
I don't, profess to say a lot about art, but I know what I like and I don't like, and I really, quite frankly, don't like this.
While she didn't speak to the council on the topic, local resident Candy Peterson agrees with Sievertson. She launched a mini campaign on Facebook in opposition to the recommended design, and a big part of her complaint is the piece is by non-local artists.
It's art, and that's a hard thing to judge, but I do oppose it being outsourced to Holland.
She says it doesn't reflect the town, and she doesn't believe tourists will appreciate the new gauge.
They want to see Alaska. They want to see eagles. They want to go on tours that show them eagles. They want the excitement, even the lumberjacks of old, and they want an Alaskan experience. They're not looking for art from Holland.
Peterson also echoed concerns about durability and whether the bottles will end up growing algae. Light told the council that a local biologist who specializes in algae is working on a way to restrict growth in the bottles, and the small amount of algae killer that could be added shouldn't skew the community's rainfall totals. City managers still need to negotiate a formal contract with the artists Jennifer Townley and Bette Audrians. That contract will come back to the council for another vote. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
For images of the proposed rain gauge and a short list of recent public art projects approved by the City Council, you can see this report on our website, kcaw.org, under Southeast News. The Tlingit people of Southeast Alaska no longer practice shamanism, but elements of it still exist in their culture today. That's according to anthropologist and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute president Rosita Worrell. She spoke Monday as part of SHI's Native American History Month lecture series. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Shamanism used to be a major component of Tlingit life. Rosita Worrell says every clan had a shaman before Russian and American colonization largely forced the Tlingit people to abandon their traditional religion.
Shamanism is generally associated with hunting, fishing, and gathering societies that often migrate with seasons to follow their food sources. To bring food, health, and protection from evil, shamans seek connections with animal powers through their rituals.
Worrell says the shaman's responsibilities included maintaining the well-being of the clan, acting as a military advisor, assuring hunting and fishing success, predicting future events, and curing illnesses. To do that, they performed rituals designed to ward off hostile and dangerous spirits and call upon good spirits to support the clan's welfare. Worrell says Tlingits believe that great shaman traveled in both the physical and spiritual world, and spirits chose certain people to be shaman.
The majority of spirits with which the shaman makes his alliances are animals, animal spirits. This reflects a widespread belief by cultures that practice shamanism that animals inhabited the world long before human beings and are essential to people because of the unique knowledge that animals possess.
She says Tlingit clans last practiced traditional shamanism in the 1950s, but she argues it still pervades the rituals and beliefs of Southeast Alaska natives today. For instance, Worrell says Tlingits, including the late Reverend Dr. Walter Soboloff, still believe all objects possess some sort of spiritual essence.
I've had meetings here in this room where people like our spiritual leader, Dr. Soboloff, has pounded on the table and says, everything has a spirit. Even this table has a spirit.
About 15 years ago at a Klan conference organized by the Heritage Institute, Worrell says several elders attributed modern social problems, such as alcoholism and suicide, to Tlingit societies being out of balance.
In our society, we have a number of practices to ensure both social and spiritual balance. And they were holding that we were out of spiritual and social balance, and this was the cause of the social illnesses that affect our society.
She says that discussion led to some of SHI's most successful cultural programs. Worrell says the influence of shamanism on modern Tlingit life is perhaps most evident in the use of sacred objects and regalia in ceremonial acts, including memorial celebrations.
When our ceremonial and sacred objects are brought out and the spirits are addressed or called upon in the same way as they were in earlier times.
Worrell says many Tlingit elders are reluctant to discuss shamanism, perhaps due to the punishment Native people endured at the hands of colonizers for practicing their religion. She says it's unlikely traditional shamanism will ever be completely revitalized, but some Tlingits are looking at ways to incorporate more of the old practices in modern ceremonies. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Residents and business owners in Gustavus are offering a reward to catch whomever is behind a recent rash of thefts in the Southeast Alaska community. A number of items were taken, worth over $2,600. There is no full-time law presence in the town near Glacier Bay, and Mayor Sandy Marchbanks says the burglaries have changed the character of the town. The reward is $5,000 for information leading to the conviction of those responsible. And a public hearing has been scheduled on a proposal recommending pay raises for Alaska's governor, lieutenant governor, and principal department heads. The State Officers' Compensation Commission plans to hold the hearing December 4th in Anchorage. A final report is due early next year. The commission has recommended raising the governor's salary from $145,000 a year to a little over $150,800, and the lieutenant governor's salary from $115,000 to a little over $119,600. Each would get another 2.5% increase beginning July 1st, 2015. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's just about 8 a.m. This is KCAW in Sitka. It's 29 degrees in downtown Sitka under mostly cloudy skies. You can expect snow showers this afternoon with snow accumulation around 1 inch. Highs around 32 degrees and southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Snow heavy at times tonight with accumulation 4 to 7 inches. Lows around 31 and east winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. And rain is likely tomorrow with highs around 35 and southwest winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. The sun rose just a few minutes ago at 7:55. It will set at 3:40 this afternoon. That's 7 hours and 45 minutes of daylight and a loss of 3 minutes and 39 seconds over yesterday. At 7:49 this morning, we had a 3.8-foot low tide that will be followed at 1:39 this afternoon by a 10.4-foot high tide, and we'll have a minus 0.3-foot low tide at 8:28. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska Tribal Council is meeting 6:30 tonight in the Sheetcoquan Nakahiti. Agenda items include certification of the results of the recent tribal council election. Soccer is being held at 6:30 tonight at the Hame Center. You can go to hamecenter.com for more information. Coming up tomorrow morning, Southeast Alaska Independent Living's Senior Hiking Club will meet at 9:15 a.m. at the Swan Lake Senior Center. Transportation will be provided to the trailhead and back, and a guest hiker from the Sitka Conservation Society will join. If you have questions, call 747-6859. We're going to rejoin National Public Radio, and we'll have a local interview at 8:18, so do stay tuned if you can. Good morning.